Hey everybody, this is Greg Soule with the Brothers Wist. This is number 31. Today we've got Alex Hart from, you used to be Seattle. I'm so used to saying Seattle, now you're in Oregon?
Portland.
Yeah, up in Portland, Oregon. He's sweating his butt off at 100 degrees, and down here it's a nice 83, so I'm enjoying it in Texas. And then also with us, as always, he's apparently like the guy. Always on the right, too. I don't know why you always end up on the top right. It's because you're like number one. Just right up there in the corner. It was Thomas Kurnak. Say hello, Thomas.
Hello, hello.
All right, our favorite Slovakian. Actually, the only Slovakian I know. So by default, you're our least favorite as well. And, you know, if you want to look at it like that.
Thanks for getting my hopes up and then just kidding right away.
You're also, you know, like the most handsome Slovakian I know. And the wealthiest, I guess. I mean, you know, so there's a lot of things you can apply to this. We can go down that rabbit hole if you want. I don't think you want us to. Let's see. So today it's going to be a little bit shorter of a cast. I think maybe, I don't know. We tend to ramble anyway. But there's a little bit of good stuff in here. Again, it's mostly news and kind of sort of an off topic, sort of a think about sort of one. I like it. Just to kind of stretch our legs a bit. So number one on the list is a new version of Unimus. It's going to be 0.2.0 release, and that's happening like 3 days, 2 days from now?
Monday, so 2 days.
2 days. Yeah, guys.
We're going to hold you to that.
We record these things on Saturday, believe it or not, so we're burning our precious weekend for you guys. Hopefully you feel honored. So tell us about the release, Thomas.
So it's pretty much the biggest release since the start of closed beta. There's so much changes everywhere. And I guess the biggest things or the biggest points are that Unimus is now ready to accept thousands of devices, which I'm sad to say it wasn't before, but now actually it's pretty much virtually unlimited scalability. I rewrote the entire database layer. I rewrote the GUI, so it's like lazy loading as you scroll and stuff like that, which makes it basically work. Even I tested with 1600 devices, and it worked instantly without any noticeable delay at all. So before, that would make it not so friendly to use anymore. So it's apparently, when you give something like this to people, they tend to throw thousands of devices into it, and then apparently things break. So now everything should finally work. And there's a ton of bug fixes, tons and tons of bug fixes, and general user experience improvements and quality of life improvements. So
very nice.
Gotcha. So one of the things I remember is you said that you rolled it out, and again, you said to somebody who had thousands, and it just kind of went to a standstill. Or didn't you say it took like 20 minutes to do a full backup on it? And then after you completely
I won't admit.
Anyway, so, long story short, you rewrote the back end, right? And now instead of 20 minutes, that those thousands are like 20 seconds, right?
Basically, the biggest issue was mass import. An import of 4,000 devices into Unimus would actually take 20 minutes before, which I am ashamed about, but testing at scale just doesn't always work as it should. But now it actually, it takes about 20 seconds to import 4,000 devices, and which I think is an acceptable number for such a high, such a load of devices. And there are still some improvements and optimizations which could be made on the backend, so it could be even faster, but priorities. So those like last final optimizations, which could make it even maybe another 10 or 20% faster, are a lot of code rewrite on the backend. So like priorities are elsewhere. I think it's acceptable to wait 20 seconds for an import of 4,000 devices.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of cracks me up a little bit is that you're ashamed of a rewrite you had to do in a beta product. You're not charging thousands of dollars in production. You know, it's beta. This is where you figure these things out. good
time. I just think it's cool that people are using it with that many devices
already. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just open up the fire
I'm
hose.
very happy that people get to use it, and then, you know, they find all of this stuff. It pretty much disrupted my entire release schedule because this entire release took 3 weeks. So it was 3 weeks of time, which was meant to originally be feature implementations, but I had to rewrite the database layer and the GUI tables and stuff like that. But it works really nicely now. So the feature releases are kind of behind schedule now, but that's because it actually works in I would say big network deployments properly now, which is also very important, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. In 3 weeks. This isn't a normal human's 3 weeks. This is Thomas putting in tons of hours in 3 weeks.
It's pretty much six days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. Yeah.
Yeah. So this
is
super.
Do you do anything else?
Not at this point, no. At this point, it's like I sleep, I eat, and I write code. And I am looking forward to actual release when my life will get back to normal.
Where you're just doing tiny bug fixes and new feature requests and little things like that, right?
Hopefully. I mean, like, the entire target feature set of Unimus is pretty close at this point. I think actually it's on schedule to be released in about 3 months. So I still plan to do an open beta in about a month, maybe even sooner if things go well. And then another about 2 months after that, I want to do a release. So I think if nothing else major breaks or needs a complete rewrite like the last 3 weeks, then I think I can still make it on schedule for the actual release.
And for anybody that's listening, we never actually introduced what Unimus was. It's a product that Thomas wrote. And this is for the two guys that are happen to be new jumping in on this cast. It's a backup utility written all in Java that will connect to your MikroTiks, pull the backup, do version control, and you can compare different configurations. But it's not just MikroTik, right? He's constantly adding new device types in there.
Actually, so it's about 25 vendors at this point.
There you go. And so you've got most of the bigs in there. For us, right, obviously MikroTik's a big one, and that came out of the box. But then you've added Cisco and, I know, like TP-Link switches.
HP, Dell,
Ubiquiti.
Yeah, Edge Router, Ubiquiti Devices, ROS, and everything else. And then PFSense, actually, in this release, 0.0, I added PFSense.
Nice.
And it's actually starting to look pretty nicely on device support. So most of the big vendors, like you said, are covered at this point. And
my favorite part is it's about a 10-minute install, right? And it's dead simple for idiots like me. So even if I configure it and tweak and tune it, all the rest of the guys in my company can run with it. So it's a really great product and soon to be released open beta. That's exciting. Well, maybe not exciting for you. Maybe it's stressful, but it's exciting for everybody else.
Have you heard any success stories of the backups saving someone or anything like that yet?
Well, I haven't actually had much feedback. I know people are using it because I can see all the downloads and I can see all the stuff, but I guess that's a good thing. I hope that I haven't heard much of the feedback because everything works, right? So I guess it works like this in every software product or every product in general, right? You usually don't hear people until something doesn't work. So so far I hopefully take the silence of feedback as there are no issues and everything works, right? And I hope that's the case.
I know Mike has at least one time successfully done a backup and restore of a critical device, I think something on the tower. So at least one.
There you go.
All right. So moving right along, the next one. And so some of these I will steal from Mike's Facebook post. That's kind of the easy way to get really quick news updates if I don't have anything just right off the top of my head. And one is Google Fiber is starting to do wireless. Actually, Alex has a little bit more information on this one.
Yeah, I don't know the guys that work for the company real closely, but Google bought a company called WebPass, which services businesses, MDU. They provide up to, you know, gigabit internet in the San Francisco Bay Area. And recently, Google Fiber announced that they were acquiring LevPass. And I thought it was interesting that you have a company that primarily is probably using backhauls for all of their customers rather than bringing fiber to every building. Whereas Google Fiber, they're doing fiber to the home, fiber to the business. And so it's two different business models. They're both trying to provide high-speed internet with, you know, all the other, you know, no taxes and niceties that come along with that.
I think there's also some marketing that goes along with it too, right? Fiber to the home. I was talking to JJ yesterday, and he's actually done some deployments. And I was saying, you know, I mean, he's a wireless guy, obviously, and it's cheaper to do wireless, right? Yeah, as opposed to greenfield or brownfield, you know, trenching in, dropping in the fiber, putting on the infrastructure in place versus just putting up a CPE on somebody's house. You know, it's faster, cheaper. But he said that there's this draw, there's this sexiness, there's this maybe he didn't say this, but maybe some kind of like elitism where I live in a community that's got fiber to the home, right? I've got fiber in my house. You know, you've got a radio stuck on the side. How interesting can that possibly be? You know, so maybe there's some of that.
Well, and I, you know, I think the WISP model works with lower speeds, but when you get into the competition of providing gigabit internet, like that's a lot more expensive equipment and it's harder to scale to a whole neighborhood. Whereas if you bring in fiber to a neighborhood and have an inexpensive way, maybe you get in at construction or maybe the development pays for it or the city or whatever, you might be able to roll out those higher speeds to a lot of customers for less money.
Gotcha. And I think some people are doing a hybrid models, right? So they're using wireless to backhaul the infrastructure and then fiber to do the last mile. So
yeah. So anyway, going back to the Google Fiber thing, and you know, they announced that in for their San Jose project and things like that, they're starting to consider doing more wireless backhauls, and it goes along with what you were just saying. And I don't know, maybe they'll maybe they'll go that route, maybe not. I know there's a lot of new equipment. The Metrolink stuff is very inexpensive, high performance. But I think that the acquisition of WebPass and bringing in kind of that history of doing a lot of the wireless backhaul, I think that definitely had an influence on the announcement that they're considering other technologies.
That's cool. So nothing, at least as far as anybody is, I haven't seen, and I'm not sure if you have, there's no brand new magical Google product that they've developed. They're using off-the-shelf equipment and doing it the old-fashioned way, right?
I think so.
All right. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's proven, right? It works.
If nothing else, you do your homework and see if they, you know, it's not bad to step back from time to time in business and make sure that you're doing things the best way possible.
For sure. So. For sure. All right. So moving right along, Mike found out that there's a MikroTik link calculator. It was new to me. I don't know if it had been around or not. It is very MikroTik in design, the way it looks. It's very square and blocky and utilitarian, but it doesn't mean it's not going to work. Have either of you guys attempted to use it yet?
I just saw the I think on one of their on the router board site they added a link to it or something recently, and that's what made me aware of it. Maybe that's where Mike saw it too, but I hadn't used it before. It does look very rough around the edges, but you know, maybe it accomplishes what people need.
Utilitarian?
Yeah.
Is that a good word for it? It looks like they have most of their various antennas in there, and then whenever you go to wireless systems, it looks like they have most of the SXT line and I think what the QRT. So it looks like it's most of the stuff's in there.
I tried to play with it for about 2 minutes and I just couldn't understand how to show me anything relevant. I mean, I played with it and I couldn't get it to show me anything relevant. I couldn't get it to calculate the link. I guess I just don't understand how it works.
I haven't actually bothered to mess with it.
I'm sorry, MikroTik, but it's so unintuitive. I don't know. If somebody knows how it works, give me a training lesson.
Maybe it was just portions were offline at the time. Maybe they've got that rectified. I don't know. So another thing that's near and dear to us here in the U.S., something I put on here, were international HAPs. We've been trying to get the HAPs in here. Apparently, they've had problems with the FCC getting everything through there recently for whatever reason. It sounds like
they're running into the same thing as Ubiquiti with getting their new AC product lines approved with the FCC. So I think that's the holdup on the apps and the WAPs and all those things that have the AC chip in them.
Gotcha. So a couple of vendors, or at least I know one vendor in the U.S., is now, I'm not sure if they're stocking or if they just happen to get an order of international HAPs, right? So international being, they're technically the full HAPs that can run everything, but you're not supposed to use them here in the States. But they have them here in the States, right? It's an interesting gray area. Mm-hmm. So I personally wonder
if the new changes to wireless in 6.37 have anything to do with this. Have you guys seen the changes to wireless?
There's been a lot of changes regarding DFS. And...
Yeah, DFS is now pretty much mandatory. There is no way to turn it off. Which I personally really don't like, because for us in certain bands, we don't have to use DFS. And sure, making a single change to your wireless link and then having a wireless link interrupted for 1 minute due to DFS is really not nice.
Gotcha. Yeah, that kind of reminds me when I was using the Ubiquiti stuff inside the FedEx forum. DFS, I want to say that it was on in certain bands, and I was thinking, that's weird because I'm indoors. So why can't I turn this off? You know, it's not like it's going to – I mean, I'm using fairly focused radio antennas, and it's heading down into a big crowd of people inside a closed stadium. Shouldn't I be able to turn this off? I would hate for some random strange signal to ripple through and just kill everything in the entire arena.
That's another thing. In my experience, the DFS is really not – just not reliable at all. It blocks frequencies where I know for sure there isn't radar. Okay, maybe a little bit background. Here in Slovakia, they publish all the radar frequencies. So you have a list by region of all the radar frequencies which are used by all the radars. So technically, DFS is still mandatory for us, of course, but not in every frequency range. Right, we have various frequency ranges, and in some you have DFS mandatory, in some you don't. Some are indoors only, obviously, and you know DFS. I personally really don't like that DFS is completely mandatory, and you just have to do it on every single board in every single region on every single frequency, because that's not what the regulations say. Of course, and obviously, MikroTik and everybody else really needs to follow regulations, but just blanket turning DFS on permanently is not required by regulations, and being forced to do it, I really don't like it.
Gotcha. And we might be putting the cart in front of the horse for some of you folks. DFS stands for Dynamic Frequency Selection, which is a feature wherein, say, a lot of radars out at airports, right, for ground landing. So a lot of airplanes, say if the weather conditions are just right or if it's too dark or something like that, or it's really foggy, they'll turn on this really near ground radar where the plane will basically guide itself in, right? And these DFS frequencies happen to lie in some of the 5 gigahertz range that we're allowed to use, but our radio equipment, if it detects something utilizing those channels, then it should automatically switch you out of those frequencies, right? Just to protect, you know, it's a safety mechanism. And so, as Thomas is saying, they're making it mandatory inside of 6.37 on the MikroTik gear.
And I wonder how much of that is the FCC coming in and saying, you know, maybe somebody there has a misunderstanding of how the regulations are supposed to work, and somebody's requiring MikroTik to do things differently, and they're just trying to get their product through. So maybe they're, you know, forced into making a change they didn't want to.
Well, I mean, the FCC being part of the U.S. government, and just knowing how slow the government is to do anything, you know, mm-hmm. if it was something, I'm just thinking in my mind, if it's a difference between having to fight this and probably delaying the product, what, a year? Maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know, or just blanket complying and then releasing and then maybe trying to fight it later, I think I would try and sell my products if I could. I'd get them out the door.
But, you know, we already have the separation between international hardware and the U.S. hardware.
Yeah.
But the software DFS change is blanket everywhere, across all hardware, across all countries, across everything, which I don't think is the right way to go across it. Why not release or somehow in software? I mean, it's software. You can do anything, right?
Yeah.
Simply, if the software detects is running on a U.S. hardware, then go ahead, blanket enable DFS, but why do it for the rest of the planet?
I don't know. Maybe that means there's going to be some... and again, this is all speculation. Nobody take this as gospel. maybe there's going to be some kind of shift where in the States you're not going to be able to get international models or something like that. Who knows? Because that has been, and I know this has happened before, where you know, folks in the U.S. will buy international radios so they can still run in those frequencies they're not technically supposed to. Some of those guys are good wireless engineers, and they know what they're doing, and, you know, it's probably fine, but, you know, a lot of them aren't. So it is what it is. So along with that, talking about the international haps, Alex was... sharing some of the heartache with supply chain issues we have from vendors. And then Thomas was, you know, pouring salt in the wound, as he is wont to do. But I guess it comes down to, he was talking about, and I've heard of other people, who was it? Justin Wilson, you know, he does a lot of tower install, does a lot of actual deployment work. He's always on towers with his beat up Nikes. He was talking about how, you know, for the, I think he said the fourth time in a row trying to order from one vendor, they were just out of 50% mm-hmm. of the product they want. So then you start hunting and pecking and just trying to find where you can. And Alex was doing a unified deployment. Is that right?
Yeah, I was just trying to get my hands on some of the new G3 video cameras, security cameras from Ubiquiti. And it seems like everybody's been cleaned out on their current stock, and Ubiquiti's just kind of trickling in one here and there so that they can make sure the product's good before they can get into their mass or whatever it is that they do. It's not the first time we've seen that from Ubiquiti, and it's not the first time that we've seen that sort of thing from other vendors, but it's just hard when the more inexpensive equipment is, you know, maybe not manufactured at the same scale as some of the other big names.
Well, I guess it could be upstream supply chain issues too, right? Maybe there's some specific chip they can't get a hold of, and I've heard of that. I think I want to say I heard Microtik getting hit by some kind of a Thero shortage or something at some point. I don't know. But it's not just Microtik, it's not just Ubiquiti, it happens to all of them, right? So.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. Of course, Thomas immediately said, wow, man, we just did a deployment. Had no problems. How do you guys like those cameras, by the way, so far?
So I wasn't the one that did the deployment, so I actually have absolutely no experience with it. My coworker did that particular install with the Unify NVR and the new cameras and everything. But I asked him specifically about, you know, how it went and if everything is fine and if it works as it should. And he said that everything was actually quite fine. They do what they are supposed to do. He didn't have any particular issues with them. So while I don't have a first-hand experience, I do have actual feedback that they work as they should.
That's cool. What did you think about them, Alex?
You know, I did quite a few rollouts of their cameras early on, the first-generation stuff. Dabbled a little bit in the G2s, but kind of stepped away from doing cameras for a while. So I know the software and the hardware has come a long way since then. I was pretty impressed with the progress that it made and some of the bugs that they worked out. It seemed like early on there was a lot of just kind of like, oh yeah, you hit a bug, and you don't. When you're talking about security cameras, you want them to actually just work reliably and capture the footage. So
yeah,
when you hit a bug and your cameras stop working, that's not desirable, obviously. So, but I think they've worked a lot of that stuff out. The only issue that I saw recently was, I guess the Android app has a problem streaming over Wi-Fi camera footage, which is kind of weird. But I guess they're looking into that and hopefully I'll get it fixed soon.
Right. That was something you found, that if you're connected to Wi-Fi, it flickers, sort of?
It does. It shows you 1 second, and then it drops out for 2 seconds, shows you another second. You can actually see, if you have the timestamp on the video, you can see 3 seconds go by each time it shows you a frame. And it's very consistent.
But then you said you would kick over to...
if you get 4G, off of Wi-Fi, right? And you use like 4G or something, it streams just fine. And if you use an iPhone, it works just fine. If you use the web, it works just fine. So, I don't know. I'm sure it's reproducible at this point. That's half the battle when you're trying to fix stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. All right.
It's a weird one, but hopefully I'll get it figured out.
All right, well, cool. All right, so kind of the big, more open-ended topic I had for today was education. Occasionally I get people emailing me saying, hey, I'm going into college. I want to do the same thing you guys do. What classes do I need to take, right? And so that also kind of opens up the conversation of, should you go to college at all, right? College versus the mean streets, you know, how do you get your education? I think 50% of the guys on here didn't go to college. I'm not sure about you guys. I ended up going to a technical college, a two-year college, or second high school, as I like to call it. So I don't know, you know, what's right for some people, what's right for others. And I think there's more. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll just throw my opinion out there. I think college is great for a lot of different reasons. One thing is it kind of it teaches you to teach yourself a bit, right? So I've noticed in a lot of my classes, my teachers, I'm not saying they were lazy. It's just that it wasn't their job to babysit us. So if you learned the material, that was great. If you didn't, then you failed the class. And I think a bit of being thrown out to the wolves is good. Plus, I was pretty socially awkward, and this forced me to interact with more people in a larger setting. So that was really good for me, too, right? Kind of personal growth and development. But can you do this stuff without going to college? I say, sure. I went to school for computer science. And so in there, the biggest takeaway I got was the methodology used for programming, right? Logic, kind of if-then-else sort of thing. To me, that goes, I'm not going to say hand-in-hand, but it works really well with networking, right? Because there's usually a very logical flow to routing protocols, right? Like, you know, you enable the routing protocol on the interface, which will build the RIB, and then from the RIB, you're filtering different things, will build the forwarding information base, right? And packets will move point A to point B. And so learning, you know, network or programming and then flow and logic, it kind of sort of pseudo went into that. Plus, I think the industry is moving a lot more towards automation, right? So having a little bit of programming is great. I don't know how in the hell Thomas taught himself to program without any additional instruction, all right? But I had to have somebody kind of get me off the ground. I did a little bit of scripting beforehand, but nothing too involved. So to me, you know, SDN, sort of Puppet, orchestration and things like that, that's going to be the next step for a lot of us, I think. That's sort of just kind of a off the cuff. I think college is a positive thing because I've heard people really poo-poo it, and if you're not into a full-blown college, maybe a technical college, a two-year here in the States anyway. What do you guys think? Did you guys go to college? What are your opinions on college?
Well, like, college is a tool, and if people use it right, then it can be helpful. I don't know that it's a solution to not being interested in a topic. Like, some people, oh yeah, you know, if you're not interested in computers, but you should be good at computers, so just go take some computer classes and then you'll get a job in working on computers. Like, I don't think it works that way. But if somebody has an interest and they use it as a tool to further their learning, I think it's valuable.
Well, also, too, you know, say I've submitted my resume someplace and there's 5 resumes. If you know, really young, you don't have any certifications or anything, if one guy's got college experience, the other guy doesn't, probably gives you a leg up. I don't know.
I've seen people hired that have college experience and no real world experience, and they don't know what they're doing. And I've seen people with no college experience that have lots of real world experience that do a really good job. Obviously, there's the combination too, but just seeing college on a resume doesn't sell the person to me. If they interview well and they can actually work through some problems, maybe that gives them a one up if there's a couple candidates, but I don't think it's a self-seller.
You don't think it's the end-all be-all. I mean, you know what, I've hired a couple of guys that had a little bit of college and then never finished. And it's worked out tremendous for me. They've been really great employees. So,
right.
And I've had some experience with some guys that had a really great looking resume that were about to graduate, and they pretty much lied their way all the way through their resume and faked their way in, and it was a horrible experience. So, I mean, I guess it's a bit of a mixed bag. Where do you fall in the debate there, Thomas?
So I think I need to bring a non-US opinion to this. So, okay, maybe a bit of background for everybody. So I went to high school in US for 2 years. So I lived in US and I actually graduated from a US high school. Before, obviously, I went to Slovakian schools and I was a part of the Slovakian school system. And then when I got back to Slovakia from my... from my exchange student program, I graduated from a Slovakian high school, and then I went to a Slovakian college for 1 year. And so I went to Slovakian college for 1 year, and then I realized that I am going to waste 5 years of my life completely here because Slovakian school system, I'm sorry, but it's crap. It's just crap. It's a horrible, horrible, archaic school system that for IT purposes is just useless. And I think this is a very important distinction that people need to make. Because, again, in the US, when I was in high school in the US, I actually learned so much more and the school system was so much better than here in Slovakia. So I think if you are listening to us and you are not from US, make sure that the school system and the entire educational system and the college you go to is actually a good choice for you. I am not against college at all. Actually, if I remained in the US, I would definitely have gone to college because I think the US school system is actually that good, and particularly in the IT world as well, because it's kept up to date, it has enough finances, and I don't want to get into the whole school system or educational system debate. But for example, in countries like Slovakia, I really feel going to college for IT, for whatever networking programming, is a complete waste of 5 years. So I think it's really important to make the decision based on not just, you know, do I want to go to college or do I not want to go to college, but also if I do go to college, will it be worth my time? Am I able to teach myself more in those 4 to 5 years than if I went to college? But of course, obviously, that again depends on your personality. Are you able to teach yourself? Because going to college is a different experience than trying to teach yourself and teaching yourself, right? And also, actually, I completely agree with Alex. If you have to be enthusiastic. You have to want it. You have to want to work with IT. You have to want to learn it. You have to want to keep learning it even after you graduate. If you go to college, it's basically, you guys know, working in IT, it's an investment for your whole life to always learn new technologies, to always keep up with the industry, to do everything else. So basically with programming, what I've done is that I decided that I want to have a nice side project with Unimus, and for that I obviously need to learn to code. And actually this goes back to US, because in high school in the US I learned Visual Basic, so I had some basic experience. The programming was taught to me there, and obviously I had very much interest in it, so I kept you know, being interested in coding, and I did scripting, Puppet, and then programmed in Autoid for automation and stuff like that. And so I actually had some background to teach myself Java and to be able to write a complete you know, huge, complicated application from basically building on that experience that I had. But again, that came from high school, which was in US, which was really good, and I'm really happy that I went there. But yeah, I guess my point just is, if you are enthusiastic enough, it's possible to learn everything yourself. It's possible, but you have to have the self-determination and the self, the drive and to be able to even do it. Because some people, you know, you tell them that here's 2 months to learn something, and they are not able to, because they will simply waste the time on other things. And you know, sometimes for some people, learning yourself is just not possible. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not that simple. I guess that's the entire point to my whole speech. There are many variables to consider. There are many things which such a decision needs to be based on.
Yeah, there's a lot of shades and gradations in this stuff, right? Like, so something you're talking about, to me, distill it down, it's ambition, right? You have to have ambition. And when I'm hiring somebody, I will tell them to their face, I'll say, there's a couple of things I can't teach you. I can't teach you ambition. I can't make you want things or want to improve yourself, right? And I can't force you to be punctual. I was like, but those are the two most important things, you to want to learn and want to better yourself and to be on time. I don't know why that's such a big sticking point with me, but I think people who are punctual, they're wired a little bit differently, right? They're
Oh, you wouldn't more. Like me, Greg.
Well, I'm saying, like, for example, if there's a shift, right, that's supposed to be, you know, we're run like, so the data center gig, we're 24/7 operations, right? And so at midnight, there's a guy who's been working for 8 hours, who's ready to go home, you know, and if you show up late, he's going to sit there and he's going to have to wait. And it's, you know, it's like common courtesy, right? If you have a shift to switch over, right? And so a lot of IT teams nowadays are, I mean, it's two guys, right? Or it's maybe three guys or maybe four guys. And you really, it's almost like you're in a foxhole with somebody else, and you got to be able to rely on that guy behind you, right? And so being punctual, to me, being on time says, you know what, you can trust me, you know, even with these basics. You're saying you're not punctual. You're here every week to do these things, and I know it's the middle of the night for you, so you're full of crap.
Everybody that knows me knows that I'm pretty much always late for everything. Not very late. I'm usually within like 5 minutes, 10 minutes maximum. I'm never late more than 10 minutes, but okay. I am not punctual.
I have a feeling you're punctual where it counts.
Late
for dinner,
I won't be late for my plane flight, right? Because the plane would just leave without me. But like, you know, there are things which you obviously cannot be late for. Like if you have a conference with a client, or if you have a product presentation, you cannot be late. It's just not acceptable. Absolutely. At all. That's about professionality, which is a different thing than being 5 minutes late for lunch or something.
Yeah, that's inconsequential, right? In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. To me, too, if it's like a client thing or a business relation thing, if you show up late or you don't bother calling, you're going to be late. To me, that says that your time's more important than mine, right? And I never want to do that to anybody else. I never want to make them think like, oh, you know, I'm not nearly as important to them, right? To me, I try and treat everybody, golden rule thing, right? Treat others as you'd have them treat you. And something I heard a long time ago, which I'm not 100% crazy, I'm not like super focused on it, but they said, if you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. If you're late, don't bother showing up. So I'm kind of a stickler about that. It's one of my things, right? But you were talking about education in the States too. Something that I can't believe I didn't talk about is how expensive it can be. So there's a lot of folks I know. I know a guy that did online here. He did the Phoenix online, and I think he said he'll have it paid off in about 20 years, you know, to get his bachelor's degree. So it can be pretty expensive. I went to a technical school, and I just worked while I was in school, and I paid my way through. It wasn't that expensive. Like, so in my hometown where I grew up, there's this college called Baylor University. I grew up in Waco, Texas. And one semester of Baylor was more expensive than my total 2 years of tuition at my technical school. So I think it's also, it depends on where you go, you know? And also, it's so funny, like, I've seen people that would go to be a teacher at Baylor, and they'd get out of school, and they'd be making a salary of, like, $40,000 a year. when their education was like a couple hundred thousand dollars. It's insane to me that you would do that, but that's not for me to decide. So I guess also is like, I went to school for computer science. I never took any networking, so I learned all the networking when I got out, and it was just through books and studying for certifications. And so for me, I learned everything from Cisco, right? I did Network Plus first, and that gave me the basics, like what's a DMZ, you know, and what is NATing? I had kind of heard the word, but I didn't have a clue what it was, you know, so I learned all that stuff. It was really exciting for me. And then the CCNA and then CCMP, and I love Cisco's education. It looks like Alex has to cut out. Thanks, Alex.
See you, Alex.
It's been fun. See you guys. Sorry, I had to chat already.
No worries, man. We're about to wrap up anyway. But yeah, Cisco education is great. I mean, they teach you history of things, and they really go in depth on the protocols and why they're doing what they're doing, which I think is great. It's just they kind of tell you history via Cisco, right? So whoever wins the battle, I guess, dictates what the history actually was. And they get to write the history books, and so a lot of that stuff, if you're reading Cisco's information, is really great, right? But so that kind of like compare and contrast that to MikroTik. If you look at MikroTik's wiki, most of the time they're just telling you these are the command options, not necessarily this is when you would use this or this is why you would use this stuff. So I've always really liked Cisco's method of really telling you why you would do all of these things, which I think is great. Also, for me, not just certifications and books, but podcasts, right? I love podcasts, Packet Pushers and Security Now and guys like that. And you guys are obviously listening to a podcast, so that's some form of continued education. How about you? What's your opinion on all this?
When I was originally learning MikroTik, actually, what I did is I remember spending hours and hours and hours on TikTube. I just watched just about every video on TikTube there is, and it was just hours and hours of watching. If you guys don't know what TikTube is, it, I guess not these days anymore, but it used to be the main portal where all the presentations from the moms are recorded and published. So I would just watch hours upon hours of presentations from the moms and from people that knew obviously way more than me. So I learned from there. Of course, that doesn't that doesn't actually teach you the basics of networking or anything like that. It doesn't teach you MikroTik itself, but it gives you a lot of the experience and of the impressions and of how to do things in the real world from the people that done things which are way above your understanding at that point. So that was how I personally learned a lot about MikroTik.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how well I personally think I know a topic. If I hear somebody else talk about it, I'm going to pick up something, right? I may not be a whole lot, but there'll be one or two interesting little tricks or ways that they went about it. In the networking world, there's so many ways to skin a cat, as we would say in the US, right? There's so many ways to do the same thing. And just because it works doesn't mean it's the best way to do it. And a lot of these guys have different perspectives or they've tried a lot of different things trying to figure out the best, right? Why some guy I heard in sales, he said, don't reinvent the wheel, steal the wheel, which I thought was funny. If somebody else has already put in the legwork, why not learn from them? Which I think
it's actually one of the most basic principles in programming, right? Don't write something that's already written, because... Yeah. There is just about no chance you will do it better than the hundreds of people that are, you know, already contributing to the main open source libraries. There is no way you will write it better and you know, you will have it less bug free than they do. And of course, why waste the time when there is hundreds of people out there which already did something like this, and it's, you know. So yeah, definitely learn on the feed of others.
Absolutely. And God, that makes me feel guilty, because I never watch as many of those presentations as I really intend to. I'll usually make a list. I was like, that's an interesting one. This one. I want to watch those. And then I'll watch one or maybe two, and then I forget and never get back around to them. But I've picked up a lot of good tips and tricks or a lot of gotchas, right? Just because something is supposed to work a specific way doesn't mean it's going to. Seems like 20% or 25% maybe even percent of what we do is working around bugs or holes in the feature set or things like that. And so a lot of these guys can help fill in those gaps for you. I've seen that multiple times. What's your favorite resource? Do you still do? I guess they've ported all the TickTube stuff over to YouTube, right?
Yeah, that's all on YouTube now. These days, I read the wiki and I read the RFCs.
Right.
I really find it that even wiki will have holes. Even videos are just still people's impressions and people's opinions at the end of the day. And I know it's not for everybody, but I've learned to read RFCs, and when I really need to, I just go down to RFCs. Which is, I don't want to recommend it to anybody because it's quite horrible at some points. It's quite horrible to dig through all of the RFC and to dig through all of things that go around RFCs.
Yeah.
And if somebody deals with RFCs, they know what I mean. But at certain levels, it's the best thing to do. But you don't have to. You have so many books. You have so many reference guides. You have so many other resources which you can tap into.
Yeah. No, I mean, and also there's, and I've never really been that guy that went to a class and learned, but there are trainers, right? I'm actually a trainer. Thomas, you're a tremendous trainer. Live classes
Really recommend it. Yeah. I train quite a few classes here in Slovakia, and I think it's a great resource. I personally, for example, back in the day when I remember to all of that uncertainty, you know, I am doing something. Am I doing it right? I have no way to know if I'm doing it right. And just, you know, studying from different materials everywhere and Googling stuff and watching presentations. Like, because, like you said, Greg, there is a bonus to presentations where you might know everything and there might be one little tidbit which is useful to you. But there is also a downside. When you need to find that one little tidbit and you need to search through 2 hours of presentation just to find the five minutes that you need, it's also a plus and a minus, right? So I actually really recommend trainings, but again, same as with the colleges, make sure that the trainer or the class that you go to is actually worth it. Because this is not from my personal experience, but I've had quite a bit of feedback from various people that just even trainers and training classes can actually be not good. So
I mean, and some of them, I think they're easier to spot than others, where they'll have, you know, come in for 3 days and get 5 certifications. You know what I mean?
If you see that, just don't.
That's a cram session where they're basically just going to force feed you the answers to the test, and they're not really going to cover the theory. They're not going to give you hands on. They're not going to teach you how to do the thing. They're just going to have you memorize the answers to the test, and those are cram sessions, and I've never been a big fan of cram sessions. If it's an actual class,
you will never learn anything out of it. It just won't be useful. You will forget like 60% of the stuff by the next 2 weeks, and you won't have
We don't need to beat that dead horse. So it's just shop around, ask questions. But you know what? Another thing, find people that you can use as resources, right? So that's how this whole Brothers Wisp thing was born. I started accumulating people, acquiring these people, these brilliant minds, especially ones that are siloed that do these very specific things, like Justin Wilson. I know he does a lot of things, but he's been climbing towers forever, right? And so if I have a tower question, I go to that guy, you know? And then Andrew Cox, if I need anything about kangaroos, I ask him, you know? No, like scripting. So usually there's 2 people I go for scripting. That's going to be Thomas or that's going to be Cox, you know? And I'll ask you guys, right? And so it's collect people that do these things. I think that's a tremendous resource. It's amazing and often unutilized resource because I'm a very prideful person. I'm not really boastful or anything like that, but I'm prideful. So I have problems asking for help. Asking for help is basically like admitting defeat for me. So the fact that I ask these guys all the time is huge for me because I never allowed myself to do that before. So collect people. And honestly, if you send me an email, I've always said, advice is free. Like if you can ask me a question, I'll answer it in 5 or 10 minutes or give you some direction. I'm happy to do that. And I bet you a lot of these other guys are too. So
just please don't ask questions which a simple Google query will
answer. If you could hit the wiki and find it in 30 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, five clicks. So I will be the devil's advocate today. To anything you say, I will find the other side.
Gotcha. That's you fit in so well with that. You're very much the yin to my yang with that beautiful hair of yours. But yeah. To me, another huge resource are people, right? And I don't know if you guys do mentor sort of thing over there, but there's a few guys that I sort of work with closely, you know, and sort of help them develop. A lot of them are employees, but some of them aren't. And there's a ton of people that are willing and very happy to do those sorts of things. So just ask around. Don't be afraid to ask. All they can say is no. They're not going to, as somebody told me, they're not going to come home and kill your children. You know, they might just say no, or they might just say yes. You never know. I think I've beat the education horse to death. Do you have anything else you'd like to add to that one?
I still think like the most important thing is your dedication, and you have to just want to do it, and you have to be prepared to educate yourself, to constantly keep working. And basically how my hiring process goes is that first of all, I don't look at education at all on the resume. I don't care. I just skip it. For me, education is nothing. Especially when you are looking maybe on a young person that comes to your organization, yeah, which is like 19 or 20, I still wouldn't care. I still wouldn't care. I think like talking with the actual person and seeing how they act, how they react, how they work in a team, how, you know, just there is. For me, there is much more than just education on a resume. But I still think that the person has to be able to be independent, to just be able to solve problems when given, to be able to ask for help. Like Greg said, that's extremely important. If one question to me will save you 3 hours of Googling and searching, then you really should have asked that question. Like, it's a waste of everybody's time and money in the end of the day for you to be searching for something for 3 hours when a single question could have solved it. So like one of the examples, for example, when we hire for our sysadmins, for our Linux guys, for our server administrators, we run Puppet everywhere. And sadly, 90% of sysadmins still don't know Puppet or even scripting, for even bash scripting or TCL or other things for that matter, which is still extremely surprising to me. I couldn't imagine my life anymore without Puppet, without automation, without everything being written in code, and I have the certainty that everything's done right because it's automated. And I don't want to open that topic. That's a topic for another day.
Yeah.
But what I do is, if we hire for, I specifically pick this example because I think it's a good example. If we hire for a sysadmin, the first thing I do is I give them an independent assignment: learn Puppet. And if the person doesn't know it, we usually make a deal with them that, you know, we will pay you less salary because you are not a productive person at our company, and we are still paying you to learn something. So your salary will not be as high as a, you know, normal network admin. And we will do that for a month. So for a month, we will basically pay you to sit at our company and learn. But if you can't do it after that month, then you are not worth our company's time, right? And so obviously this comes after the hiring decision that we hire a guy, but I think you have to be prepared even for things like that. You know, if you don't know a technology that you really need to know, be prepared that sometimes you will have to learn things that which you never even knew existed, and new technologies from scratch, and it may take you a month to learn a new technology. It's normal in the industry. This is even after your college and education and everything else.
When I was fairly young and getting started and moving through for years and years, I said, I don't want to take a new job or a new position where I know everything. I want to only know maybe 40 to 60% of the material, right? So if you go into a job where you know everything, you're going to get bored. What's the point of doing that? There's no growth there. So you want to go into a new job where you have something that can challenge you and you can build on. Look at Mike coming in. We're just about to close it up.
Sweet.
What a punk. So since Mike's here, we'll actually go ahead and do the closing and let Mike close this out. So I just
want to point out, at least I am not the only one who got the haircut.
There you go. Got those ears lowered. Looking good, Mike. I'd kiss you right on the mouth. So we have a new method of contest.
That's a tangent to explore.
That's a joke. That's a joke, Thomas. So we have a new method to contact us. We actually finally have a contactable email address. Contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. We had the URL. Why not use the email eventually? So one thing that's kind of new for us is if there are any sponsorship opportunities, any vendors that want to highlight some of their equipment, want to get on, talk about a new product, or interested in doing sponsored casts. Mike doesn't come on here for free. We have to pay him. And, you know, it's pretty difficult to keep up with that pace. I mean, look at that face. It's high class over there. Also, viewer questions. If you want to pop anything in there, any comments, that'll work too. Still, probably the best and most responsive method is going to be via Facebook, because that's Mike's baby. He's the keeper of all things Facebook. So all of that good content you keep seeing pumping out at least every 2 days. I see something new popping up every 2 days. Mike is staying on there, and he's extremely responsive to all the questions and queries and comments. So be ready for him to respond back. So you can't just throw some crazy troll stuff out there. He's gonna bite you if you do. But be sure to reach out to us. I think we're going to be doing a sponsored cast probably in the next week or so. It's going to be our first. So we'll sort of see how that goes. We'll feel our way through that one. I can honestly say I finished my lynda.com course, and I feel like a weight has been lifted from me. I feel taller now. It's been mushing me down like a couple of inches, so I can finally breathe again. So hopefully I'll be able to get back to making a little bit more content and things like that for you guys. Thomas, what's new? What's different? Anything other than Unimus?
Nope.
All right.
Just Unimus.
All right. Well, that's enough for you, I think, at this point. I don't want you to die. You're too young for that. Mike, you got anything?
Still got a couple of months to go, but...
And then you can retire as soon as that's out. Mike, you got anything new or different or interesting?
Hopefully this next week I get a new rooftop lit up that relays me to a data center. I thought we had everything in the bag. And then I thought we were talking $600 total for the roof. He was talking $600 per antenna. So that's a big difference.
Yeah, that's extremely different.
So hopefully we can work through that, because I've been trying this guy for like 4 months, 3 months, to get this rooftop nailed down, because my other circuit goes dark at the end of the month, so I don't have a lot of time to...
That's a lot of 4G modems you're going to have to bond together.
One data center bought the other data center, and it's been migrating, and it's just been a process getting arrangements to move things across. I do have one guy that I can go to with a last case backup. You know, hey, buddy, I need to go on your tower today. I can get on his tower, but I'd really like to go on this other rooftop.
Gotcha. Well, it's going to be like a week of thunderstorms as soon as you decide you're going to do that. So
I'll be up there.
All right. So to everybody who's listening, thank you guys for continuing to listen. We're trying to improve all the time. Please give us any feedback that you can. This is like this is a very one-way relationship. We're always talking at you guys. You guys are never talking back. So please reach out to us. Tell us anything. Tell us we're doing awesome. Tell us we're doing terrible. Tell us how lovely Thomas's new haircut is. Tell us anything. Thank you guys, and we'll see you soon.